Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXOradio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You are listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It. For Imperial and Mexicali Valleys, we are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7. And with your host, Scott Dudley, and yours truly, Maria Wyatt.
Welcome. Good morning. 337-8874 is the phone number. Make sure and dial 1760, of course. You know, we've almost worn out that recording. I'm probably the only one still getting it. Everyone else has figured it out that we're supposed to dial all those numbers.
It's 1760-337-8874.
But now the recording's like all garbled because it's come on so many gazillion times that it's falling apart. Anyhow, good morning and welcome. We have a guest today. His name is Warren Sherlock. One of the pillars, one of the really foundational people in human services from Imperial County, and maybe one of the lesser known ones. This guy doesn't get his picture in the paper very often.
And he was my
No most wanted sign.
He hired me. He's the one that hired me.
Like stealth.
You know, I'm here because of him.
Yeah.
How about that?
I like it. Somebody should walk out with a cake right now and handle it. So 337-8874, and our guest today is Warren Sherlock, and we are going to get, you know, how many years you've been around now? 25-ish?
Yeah.
20 years.
20 years. Okay, 20 years. So we have 20 years of your experience, 20 years of your foresight, 20 years of your vision to go through this morning. Where do we start? What does this community here this morning that's really
why? Because originally you're not from here.
No.
So. What makes
I'm from a farming community and from Walla Walla, Washington. So I was in San Diego, probation officer, before I came out in private practice. And I came out as a consultant for 5 years. I started in 1987. So I've been here about 20 years. I've also been an instructor part-time at San Diego State for 25 years, over on the main campus as well as here. And so the farming community appealed to me when I came out to El Centro. Unfortunately, I came out in the middle of August, which made me think maybe I wanted to go back to San Diego because it was very hot. But I was recruited basically as a consultant to develop children's programs. That was my first mission. And out of that came development of programs such as Vista Sands, adolescent program, school-based program, so on and so forth. So my background in a lot of ways, this was pretty natural for me to come out. And I'm kind of the Andy Rooney of behavioral health. I've been around a long time. I'm in my late 60s. I'm still highly motivated. And I feel that a part of my mission now is to help train a lot of the new people, a lot of the rookies, and bring along a lot of the students as well as is our staff. So I was also alcohol and drug administrator for 8 years. We developed a lot of new programs there. One of the things that struck me coming in this morning, one of my thoughts was, first of all, we're very fortunate to have a leader. Mr. Horn's, in my view, a talented visionary and a very strong leader. And I think that makes a lot of difference to me who I'm working for, because as I take my background and all the things that I've done here in the last 20 years with the staff, my thinking is that creativity and innovation is the key, that we always have to be in touch, and that training really keeps me in touch. So I feel really privileged to be able to be in the department, to be with what I consider outstanding staff. I really do. I feel we have a way above the standard in the staff. I believe that we have all the way from clerical to doctors and nurses and rehab techs, and management is superb. So I feel very good about that, and I think that's probably why I'm still here. Is my sense is that with the challenges that we have in the background that I bring with it, I'm a balance beam because I bring with it 46 years of experience. And that includes, and I want to talk just a little bit about my background. Not only did I come from a farm community, I worked at a boys' ranch in San Mateo. I worked with street kids for 4 years. I was a consultant in 22 job corps centers where I trained staff. And as I mentioned, in probation, I was a probation officer in San Diego for 10 years, and I was in specialized programs where I did family therapy 6 hours a day, so on and so forth, very specialized. So part of my mission in coming out here was to rehab. Children's department at the time I showed up was terrible. It was in bad shape. Vista Sands was basically in trouble. It didn't really make any sense in the program to me. And really, the children's services were not developed at that time. So that was part of my mission when I came out to do that.
Well, and at that time in behavioral health, statewide, countywide, or whatever, I don't know that there even was a real focus on children's
that
programs.
Was in 1987? That's when, you know, I would drive by and I would say, oh, that's where the crazy people go.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was me. You know, that was, come that along was 17 with, years. Come I was along 17 with years old. Yeah.
One of the things, first things that we started, and we got some resistance to, was the Interagency Youth Council. We got a lot of resistance at first. Agencies didn't really want to collaborate that much. They weren't used to working together at that time. I think it's very important for our listeners to understand how small we were then. We were a very small staff, and I think we're 300 plus now. Then we were probably 60 or 70. But our smallness worked in our favor because we were able to develop the interagency, and then that kind of went into the school base and all the other kinds of things that we did. Mr. Horn was developing the adult side at the time. I was developing the children's side. So we had a lot of good stuff going on from the ground up. What I see happening now, which is different now, we have a lot more staff. We have a lot more challenges. And also I see where, in my view anyway, that one of the things that really happened good for this year in 2009 was our ability to, in management and through our leadership, to keep our staff and not lay staff off. We had a lot of anxiety. We had a lot of frightened staff. We had people come and talk to me that were anxious, and they were saying, I'm going to get laid off. I'm going to get fired.
Yeah, and we were compared to other counties. I mean, Pierre County was in very good shape on the behavioral health side. There's a lot of counties that laid off a lot of people.
Yes, many of them did. When I was an alcohol and drug, I was part of, of course, the state folks with alcohol and drug, but also I was working on some private committees. And in some of those committees, they saw some of it coming, but not much of it. So I think all of this hit us all so fast that it put real challenges for our staff. And, you know, I really feel we've met a lot of those challenges. I think change upsets people. I think a lot of people have difficulty with change. We do have some staff who don't want to change. They want to do what they did 20 years ago, and we can't survive that way. We can only survive by being innovative. That's really my view on that. So I think because of my many years of what I do, my view is that that helps because I'm a seasoned kind of veteran in the sense that I can bring a balance to the staff because I believe in that. I think you need a balance. And statewide, there are many of the older folks that have left. The leadership is hurting very badly statewide. And as Maria mentioned, many counties laid off. Many are in disarray. Many are confused. And our county at the same time is going the other direction. We're putting out very good specialized programs. We're training people, incredible trainings for our clinicians with family therapy and skilled helpers, so on and so forth. So my sense of when I came in this morning, when I said, what am I going to talk about? I wanted to include my background to say we all arrive where we arrive through our backgrounds, where we were and what we were doing.
And you're licensed.
Yes, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm also a licensed domestic violence counselor, which is pretty rare out here. You don't see too many of those. One of the things also that I emphasize, I've taught, as I said, at San Diego State for 25 years, I emphasize very strongly with the students is to work very hard on themselves to gain skills and knowledge, but also to have confidence in themselves.
And right now it's really hard because of the economy. You know, we've always told kids, you know, students go and not just kids, I mean adults to pursue your education, go back to school, go get your education. Well, they go and get their education and they get their bachelor's in, you know, whatever field it is, business, psychology, liberal arts, and it's hard to get a job out there. But still.
Today's BA is yesterday's high school diploma.
it's maybe a foot
in the door, but maybe not.
Yeah, so it's still so important. Even though the economy looks really bad, jobs are very scarce, they still need to go to school. You know, and it's hard. It's right now. It's really hard to.
It's difficult, but my view is that there are jobs. I just had some students get jobs in San Diego because they have to learn how to get a job a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that no longer do you send in a resume and just
sit down and wait.
No, you have to go out and get to know people.
Volunteer?
Volunteer. And every interview, in my view, is a connection. That's where you're connecting with people out there. So my students did tell me that. They were discouraged because some of them said, we can't find a job in the Valley. Or I said, yes, you can. It depends on how you do it.
I just talked to one of your former students at the Rites of Passage Evening Learning Center that recently opened, and he gave him an A.
Yeah, well, you worked for it.
I
and
know.
He gave you an A, too. It's a mutual A.
Well, it is a lot of fun teaching because it's a wonderful hobby, and I get more out of it than they do. And part of it is kind of teaching them the tricks of the trade. We work in the real world where we have to apply our skills and our knowledge. You can imagine when you're a student at San Diego State and you have a lot of fear, and people are telling you there's no jobs, don't get a master's degree, so on and so forth. There's sort of a negative contamination with that.
Well, and you're already in because you're racking up student loans, and you know you're financially you're putting yourself on the line already.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So when the budget cuts hit San Diego State, it really threw things into flux, and the students really frightened people a great deal. So part of what I had to do was to deal with that and say, let's talk about that. Let's talk about what you're feeling, what's going on with you right now. So I also connected that to our department to say, okay, I'd like to see some of you volunteer for other agencies. I'd like to see you make connections with our department and make those kinds of connections so that people know you and they know what you do and how good you are at what you do. I find sometimes self-esteem is the issue. Some of them have self-esteem issues where they feel I'm not good enough to do that. My language isn't good enough. They struggle with that. Mm-hmm. I've lived in Mexicali half of my life, came over, so on and so forth. They're extremely sharp, but they don't know that about themselves because no one's told them that. Or the theories don't apply to the real world to them. Sometimes they get a lot of theories, but they don't have training as we train our people, and they don't know functional family therapy. They don't know how to do assessments. They don't even know what it is that we do. So
they just have the book knowledge.
The book knowledge, yeah. And so we do the knowledge and application part. And that's why I'm very excited about what we're doing in our department. I think we're way above the norm. I know we're way above the norm for the counties. And I think with that, what's happening is that we're drawing in a lot of people with our energy. A lot of people are asking me, including students, how could we get the training that you're getting? How can we do that? Other agencies are asking me that. And I'm saying, well, we're just training our people now. And it's expensive. It costs a great deal of money to do that. There's a lot of commitment to that training. And I honestly believe in the next 2 years, our staff will not only be above the norm, they'll be staff probably the best trained in the state of California. I believe that. And that's our clinicians and our rehab techs. And we have, as I said, our clerical are excellent. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of really good people who work really hard. So part of it is our image on behavior health is to help what we exhibit and what we model. And I believe that we do that very well. I really do. I think our management, I think, has really done a very good job in the last year and a half through a lot of hard times. Mm-hmm. And there's been so much stress. People have been so stressed out. And we haven't had any answers, and the economy's bad, and we're going to have a job, but what's going to happen? I think that we model that, and we've managed that in our leadership so that they feel, okay, I'm not going to go south.
You've seen cycles like this, though.
Yes.
Is it easier from your perspective because you've seen it go down and come up and go down and come up?
I think so. That's a really good point, Scott. I think that probably I'm a little more patient with it. I don't tend to catastrophize as much.
Again, the balance being this, mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. refer to yourself that, mm-hmm. you know, when there's all this mm-hmm. kind of catastrophizing by people who haven't experienced as much of the economic crisis.
Maybe it's because the first time they've gone through that. And so,
right, oh. Yeah. You've got all these kids that are like, oh, my goodness, where am I going to get a job? And, you know, part of your role is just being confident, you know, just continue to develop yourself and stuff opens up.
I think we have a role we forget sometimes of mentoring and coaching. It's not necessarily that we, develop the highest skills in them, but we give them the fundamentals so they can develop the highest skills. You're both very highly competent managers, by the way. I've seen enormous growth in you two, because I've been here with you.
Okay?
And that growth has come about because in your expertise over the years where you've desired to develop yourself that way. And I think that's the kind of people that move and really help the clients, because I think in the bottom line, a staff that is highly skilled with knowledge really do assist the clients and help them heal and help them get better. I think untrained staff don't. I don't believe that.
And you mentioned something a little bit earlier about our role in modeling. Maybe in addition to the skills and the competency, that just modeling, that self-development might be a real important element of. I mean, I've seen that in your career when I watched you do your stuff. You know, always trying to get it better, always trying to get yourself to function at the best needs of whatever's going on, turns out to be good medicine for people who are trying to do that in their own lives.
I think it's an energy. I think what happens is, and because I've asked my students this a lot, the energy that you exhibit yourself motivates them. But if your energy isn't there, they feel they feel like you're phony. They're not really coming off that way. So, when I talk about development and growth in our department, it's because if you think about it in your daily jobs. I've worked for four corporations, private corporations, okay, Viacom, Holt, so on and so forth. And I get the argument that, and this comes also from my family, I get the argument that government is inefficient and only private corporations can do this and that. That's a very faulty thinking, because there were things in private corporations we did well on contracts. But I believe in the county there's things that we do above that. We do above those norms and those standards. And again, that's our leadership.
Well, a lot has to do with funding. You know, we need to provide services and at a certain level with limited funding.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're sometimes our services based on the economy and what the state brings down. And but we still have to provide, the services still need to be provided. You know, families, you know, kids still need the services. We just can't, you know, completely say, well, I'm sorry, you know, can't help you.
Yeah, if you see the amazing amount of clients that we serve every day. I was thinking of that yesterday, that when I came back, there were so many people in the waiting room and all over the place. And I was thinking, how many people rely on us and want help and need help? And yet our challenge is, how do you deliver service with cutbacks and so on and so forth? But, you know, I look at this from a different perspective. I think we've grown a lot ourselves in the last year and a half because of these challenges. I think one of the reasons that we've survived as well as we have is because maybe we didn't see it coming no more than anybody else, but we pulled together and said, okay, we have to use our best management skills to make sure that whatever funding we had to close programs and make shifts, that whatever we're going to do, we're not going to lay off staff doing that. I think that's just phenomenal. And yesterday when I went to Board of Supervisors, I felt very good because I felt they really support that and understand that. I think we have an excellent Board of Supervisors. I really do. I think they really understand a lot of the programs and the things that we do. So this is kind of an all-county kind of thing. It's not just behavioral health. I look at it from a sort of an interest system. I'm part of the Interagency Steering Committee, which is all the department heads and everybody from the county that we work together. So from the top down, it starts with the top. If you have innovation at the top and people can create and innovate and take risk and not be frightened of what we do and not be frightened of change, I believe that's us.
It's hard, you know. I think we're going through that. Scott and I are going through that with the innovation. You know, there's money coming down from the state through the Mental Health Services Act on innovation. We need to develop an innovative program. And for the past couple of years, all we've been told and we've been saying, you know, you need to use an evidence-based program, something that, you know, a program that you implement and there's outcomes, positive outcomes. It's measurable. You know, use evidence-based. And then here comes the state and says, here's some money and develop something new. You know, innovative, and implement it. And if it works, you know, incorporate it into your existing system. And if it doesn't, that's okay. You know, scratch that out and start from the beginning again. And we were kind of like, wow.
But you're saying for upper management that that is
and
an
that's
essential
something,
part of
and that's
of
something that we need to be, you know, and that's something that our director, Mr. Horn, has. He's very innovative.
Mm-hmm.
He's very innovative, and that's why he is the leader.
Mm-hmm. We have strong leadership, absolutely. And that's what allows us to be feel free, to be able to create, and be able to take chances and take risks. I see what you just explained as opportunity. Mm-hmm. That's opportunity to work together, create your own thing in terms of getting that together. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
That gets my juices flowing, that kind of thing. What I don't like is working. If I had to work in an agency that was static, we did the same thing every day, I'd be bored stiff. I probably wouldn't be here.
It ain't going to happen around here.
No.
Oh, no.
Sherlock, respectfully.
No. Oh, no.
Hey, this is top of the hour. I have to jump in, and we have to grab a break here. You're listening to Let's Talk About It. We'll be right back after this top of the hour break.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service, Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You're still listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with your host, Scott Lilly, and yours truly, Maria Wyatt. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. Don't forget to dial in the 760 first. And we are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue.
Welcome back, and thank you, as always, for tuning in and listening, spending time with us.
I know. You know what? I realize we do have some listeners out there. So, yay. Thank you very much.
We want both of you to clap your or pat yourselves on the back. No.
A clap.
A one-handed clap. Okay. Okay, our guest today is Warren Sherlock, and Warren is the Deputy Director of Behavioral Health, and he's also an MFT,
mm-hmm.
and he's also a professor, a professorial person. What do you teach over at San Diego State?
The psychology department.
Okay, so any kind of the psychology classes?
I teach intro to counseling, I teach theories of personality, and I have field practicums. So I teach about three different courses.
Nice. You've been in 25 years, so pretty much all the people in human services and psychology-related jobs, a lot of them have gone through you because a lot of them come from San Diego State.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, when I was looking in one of our meetings the other day, about 30-some percent of our staff that have been promoted through supervisor, manager, and so forth were in my class mm-hmm. years ago, 9 or 10 years ago. And it's a really good feeling.
I think that's a neat feeling. Yeah.
It is. There's a sort of a connection there. I don't talk about it, but
yeah.
I feel it. And there's a sort of a feeling of feeling very good about that, that they've really moved up and they've worked very hard, and they deserve it. They really deserve it.
Well, I'm kind of excited because we're going to have, there's a position that recently closed to Behavioral Health for a mental health rehab tech position, and there were several, many, many applicants. So I'm excited to see the pool of applicants. You know, this is the background, where they're coming from. It's going to be very interesting. A lot of them are probably going to be from San Diego State, mm-hmm. recent graduates with, you know, psychology background. So,
you know, as a marriage and family therapist, how does that inform your management style? I mean, a lot of what I hear you saying is there's a lot of relationships and a lot of relationship building and a lot of connections between things. Is that, do you get a sense of that in your day-to-day operations or as you've done your career of how important relationships are and using that model, I guess, to kind of see where you're at and where you're going?
Yeah, I do. I think that's a really good point. I think you have to create relationships no matter what you do. And there has to be sort of a bonding trust kind of thing. I want to mention a bit with the training of our clinicians. About 3 years ago, we started training our clinicians. And now we're working on training rehab techs. And one of the things that we started with was talking about that, about what that means about creating relationships. And I had them do some assessments at that time to see what they look like. And then we looked at those a couple of years later to see what kind of progress. And they've just made enormous strides. So my thinking is that in what we're speaking to, folks need knowledge and they need skills. And if you notice yesterday in management, we were talking about that. We were talking about how new people coming in do not have the requisite skills mm-hmm. to start off with our clients. And one of the things I always speak with clinicians and folks I train, we have very difficult populations. It takes a lot of special knowledge to be able to work with them. And we have such a diverse population. I often wonder in my own life, My uncle was a paranoid schizophrenic, and he lived with us for about 6 years.
Mm.
And he was in the hospital about 30 times, in and out. He was on medication and so on and so forth. And he lived with us because he was, at times he would get a little violent, but most of the times because my mother could manage him, my father could manage him. So I got an early entry into seeing how people treated mentally disordered clients. A lot of people treated him well because he was in a small community.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things when I'm training or talking about things is we always have to show great respect, and we create a relationship, understand that that individual may not be every day very nice to you. There may have psychotic episodes. There's things that occur. So part of it is to kind of toughen them up to say, if you're going to be real good with clients and create a relationship, you also have to accept them from where they are and help them get to where they're going. That's not easy business, and I think we forget that sometimes.
Hard to be compassionate when somebody's angry at you sometimes.
Well, yeah. The same, I mean, it does, when we, we're now, it's been taking, what, 10 years to integrate? I mean, getting in the full integration, we're still not there.
Yeah,
that's the mental health and the alcohol and drug part. But when we first started moving toward integration, you know, there were some staff that worked for mental health that didn't really want to work with clients that had alcohol and drug problems. And staff that had alcohol and drug clients didn't want to really work with mental health clients. But we're in the business of helping. So it doesn't matter what, you know, the issues the person has or the problems.
And the deeper we look, the more closely we see
they're
that
integrated.
Where are you going to put the lines between populations? Because so many people with mental health disorders are struggling with substance abuse or vice versa.
Well, I think we've done a very good job of training. I know it's ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
We've done a good job of training our clinicians. We're training our rehab techs with trauma focus. We're doing a lot of specialized training so that when clients have those special needs, they're able to cope with that and really help them in terms of moving them forward and really moving mm-hmm. them forward.
That's a real emergence in the last 10 years or so, isn't it? I mean, going from just, we're going to help you, we're going to give you therapy, to these are your specific needs and this is the specific therapy we're going to plug mm-hmm. in to make that work.
We just started, you know, a couple of months ago with family therapy. We've never really provided, you know, and I've been saying this, we've never really provided family therapy. We've done collaterals with families, but family therapy, it started, and we're really excited about it, and we're seeing progress in the families. So,
well, in substance abuse families, I think when you you're not working with families, I'm not so sure you're doing a great deal for them, because you have to deal with the whole family mm-hmm. system, as we know.
Well, in one of the therapies that we're doing, the functional family therapy, most of the times the substance abuse issues get resolved because of the family therapy that we're providing. And even though the client gets referred for, you know, family conflict,
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of underlying issues, and most of the time, substance abuse also gets resolved. So we're all excited about that.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, those are a lot of the good things that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, we're forming a reputation in the community because there's others that are asking to come in and see if they can be part of the specialized mm-hmm. training. Again, telling them about the kinds of things that we're doing. And for our staff, I think they're very fortunate to have all the monies and dollars that have been put behind specialized mm-hmm. training. And our clinicians, when they get licensed, truly very confident. And very confident to deal with people. And our rehab techs are getting good training, going to the families. I'm very impressed with the level of our staff. I think overall, we really do have an outstanding staff. They really care about people. They spend extra time. They give them a little more. There's always a high amount of respect. And I know how important that is. I also, in the last 3 years, I had one of my nieces committed suicide from pain pills. And I saw how the family went through that. And they met with a family therapist. And had that not have occurred, I think the family would have been really in jeopardy at that point. It was very painful. I received a call here just down the street one day on the cell, and it was my nephew, and he said, Stephanie's, has overdosed on Vicodin mm-hmm. and something else, and she was going through a lot of issues. Well, if you think daily how important that is that we deal with that all the time. We don't even think of the things we do in the crises. We do a lot of good work in the mm-hmm. crises. And there's a lot of good work going on throughout the department. We don't think about that because we do that every day. Mm-hmm. But to the outside public who are coming in, it's very important how they're treated.
And it's very important to have the public know that we no longer, behavioral health is no longer, you know, that department that, you know, have that, you know, take down those past ideas that, you know, they would get the jackets that they would put on people?
The straight jackets.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we medicate them and, you know, just give them a lot of medication. And we're not that department, you know.
No. And the reason I brought up the situation, because I talked to class about it, was we often in our society don't talk about things that happen in our families. We really don't. We keep it very quiet. And when I talked to the class about that, and I said, let me share something with you about some painful experience and about what happened, I was surprised that 9 students or 10 students come after class and said, I want to talk to you. This has happened to us. So many things that happen in families that we see every day that we think is normal out there, often people don't talk about them. They mm-hmm. keep them to themselves. So by having a good trained staff, they're able to deal that, create the relationship, as you spoke to Scott, and then work with them and bring them along and help them work the pain. In this case, there was a family therapist as well as a social worker at the hospital that really helped the family because this individual, she hung on for about 2 weeks before she died. So a lot of dynamics went on in the family, and a lot of arguments were going on. Mm-hmm. People were stressed. And I think in today's world, we have so much stress in our world today. That's another thing we don't talk about. We don't talk about time management, reducing stress in general. And I think we all got a lot on our plate, and I think mm-hmm. we need to talk about it. And we need to share some things. Once in a while, take a chance with somebody you mm-hmm. trust, create a relationship, and say, you know, I'm not doing too good. You know, this is happening, that's happening. And that's really very powerful because when you share that, it opens up other people. And even over there, when I went to the hospital, I spoke with a social worker. She was delighted that I was a therapist. She was just delighted. And she told me some things going on with her. I didn't ask her. She just shared it with mm-hmm. me. She said, can I just talk to you a minute? And I think maybe we carry those signals around as therapists. I think we have something on our head mm-hmm. that says you can talk to me.
So it's written on the front of your shirt.
I think it is.
Didn't know that.
I think it is. And so I think, and also taking time to care daily and finding joy in life. There's a lot of folks today who are not finding any joy. They don't see any of it. They think the world's collapsing, where everybody's catastrophizing, that kind of thing. I think we give the world hope. And it's realistic hope. I don't think it's phony at all. I think clients need that. And if our staff feel like they're supported, and management, we support mm-hmm. them, then they do very well with the clients. They need support. They need to know, when I'm seeing 50 people a day or 30 or 20 or whatever I'm doing, somebody recognizes my good work.
Well, I mean, for behavioral health, I mean, we've gone so much forward. When I started here, you know, 12 years ago, actually 12 years ago,
when you were eight years old, we
didn't have many clinicians, you know, and now we have a lot of clinicians, and there's a lot more that just finished, I think 6 or 7 just finished their master's program on marriage and family therapy, and now they're trying to get the hours. But, you know, that's a lot more. I mean, I don't even know how many we have right now, clinicians. How many?
All together with practicum and clinicians, we have about 22.
Wow. See?
Yeah.
And before we didn't have...
an outstanding ones. They're just...
We only had one or two.
They're really good. And they're getting better all mm-hmm. the time. They're always improving. And, of course, you know, we have a couple of committees where we monitor their documentation. And now we have the rehab committee, rehabilitation for the rehab techs, where we'll be they're going to get specialized training.
Mm-hmm.
And that direction of the department, that's just really yeah. incredible.
We have to say that, like, Helen McLean, she recently got licensed.
Yes, she does.
She's now a licensed clinical social worker, so congratulations. So and there's going to be more coming. More scheduled to take their test, and I know it's a very difficult test.
There's 6 of them that are going
to be. Yeah, it's a very difficult test, mm-hmm. and they have to do I don't know how many thousands of hours So
3,200 hours.
3,200.
Yeah, one of the things you're doing now is you're kind of running herd on those, on that group of the next generation of helpers in this community. What's that been like for you, working with that group of people? You mentioned they're outstanding people.
Well, what I consider it a privilege because, oddly enough, because I guess I've been here a long time and I know most of the programs really well, my vantage point is I go across the whole department. I'm in and out of all departments. I'm able to train. I'm able to identify problems. And because I have the background and I know the systems, it's very easy for me to do that. And when I can share with them, and they do often ask me a lot of things, and they'll say, hey, when you run a group, Warren, what happens when you do family therapy? I'm not quite sure, but I'm catching on. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I think part of that privilege for me is because of the knowledge and skill that I've been able to develop with them and share with them. That really helps them because it's really, it's kind of like the intern talking to the doctor. If you notice in a hospital, the rookies are talking to the doctor because you kind of like to know mm-hmm. that the veteran's around somewhere, at least the surgeon's around somewhere. It makes you feel better. I think in our system, and we don't talk about this too much, I think that's the balance that you need. And if you know, we study Drucker's a lot, which I believe in a great deal. And Drucker's, of course, is on management and organization. He talks about that. He talks about how you need a balance of older, you need some middle-aged folks, and you need people starting out. It's a balanced kind of thing. And when you don't have that, you have an imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of having sort of a homeostatic balance, what happens is that your new people coming up don't have that advantage.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking to people who only got 8-10 years, and that's what's happening statewide. They got some directors that are looking for directors statewide because they don't have, in many counties, they don't have the more experienced veteran people to deal with. So that's the whole point of balance here is in the sense I've been where you've been. So when you talk to me, that's good. We were able to share that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm able to say, well, for me, this is how that worked. So what I found with the clinicians and the rehab techs, they're really eager and motivated to always grow and learn. They really are. And I think part of it is they want to feel free that they can talk to somebody about it. They can say, I blew it with a client today, or I did an assessment. I'm not sure. I think I missed it.
Yeah, it needs to be safe to say those things.
It needs to be safe. And that's the environment. As managers, that's the environment that we create. We say, okay. I think our doctors are superb, our nurses, I really do. I mean, I think they're way above the standard. And I think I see them and I see the work they do every day and you don't hear them talking about it, but they're really good. And I like that because if we were in an agency where the standard was mediocrity, I wouldn't be here. I could care less.
Yeah, we've upped our standard. You know, now it's the gold standard.
Yes.
And
it's a pursuit of excellence, but it's true.
Yeah, I think we codified it and formalized it and come to recognize that we end up, behavior, the one benefit of working in human services is perfection is going to be pretty tough call here. And so there's always going to be room to change and grow. There's new knowledge coming out. There's new problems coming out. There's all sorts of different aspects of this that are continuing to evolve. And there's always going to be something for us to grow into.
Mm-hmm.
And so for those of us that appreciate being challenged on a regular basis, we're in the right place.
All the time, yeah.
Well, and
change is
conversely,
good.
You want people doing these jobs that are okay with that challenge, that are recognizing that, you know, we're not staying with what we did 10 years ago, that it's, you know, the landscape's changing, we're going to get better at what we do because the needs of the community dictate that.
Yeah, and I mean, I learned that from Warren, because before that, I mean,
Yeah, Warren's always been the change guy.
Yeah. When I was under him, I mean, I had, sometimes I worked several things at the same time, and from one day to another, I was here, and then the next day, I was over there, and then the next day.
Warren Sherlock and his incredible moving cheese.
I
remember that.
Well, I do believe in challenges for people. I think sometimes people complain. They say, even in class, they tell me I push them too hard. When we were audio taping last semester and so on and so forth, and yet at the end of the class, the students even said, I learned a great deal, and I was scared to death, and I didn't understand time mm-hmm. management. I didn't know what you were talking about. We had an hour to do it. We usually have 3 hours to do it. Well, part of it, as I said, I teach life values, and life values is more important to me than you just becoming a digital android where you just have a lot of stuff and you're doing a lot of high-tech stuff, but you mm-hmm. don't really know what you're talking about. So I do the same with the staff where I say, okay, I'll help move you forward if you want me to. If you don't want me to, that's fine. But we're working as a team. And I really believe that. I believe that our management is really working as a team. And if they don't, I think we cheat the staff. I think the line staff who are out there every day with clients on the line need to know that not only are they getting support, but they were working well as a team. Because we have communication problems like everybody.
Yeah.
Every agency has problems. But I think it's how we meet those challenges. So we confront them. I think we are. I think we're growing immensely.
You put a real human face on organizations and organizational development. I appreciate that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
337-8874 is the phone number. Hey, all you ex-students of Dr. Warren's here, and you can call him and complain about your grades. And reread some of your essays to him and have him.
Can I get a head grade, different grade?
And make him
but then, you know, those are the things that, you know, we were over and done with 2009. Now we're in 2010, and we still have challenges. You know, we just heard the state of address that the governor gave, and you know he got out his preliminary budget, and you know there's more cuts coming. You know, just so there's something we have to deal with, and that's a big challenge. And how are we going to provide all these services, and you know, and continue providing these services? So
in an environment
things
where
are gonna
there
have
may
to
be
change.
More pressure, and
yeah.
there may be more distress,
yeah.
and there may be more stress.
We need to be innovative, and we need to change, and all those.
So we're keeping you around because we need to be up to this challenge. Yeah.
Well, and to think the clients don't feel what we feel. Okay, we feel all the stresses, so on and so forth.
Well, yeah.
The clients coming in feel all those daily living kinds of stresses, coping kinds of things they have to do. That's why we have to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and our every day at work is their once-in-a-lifetime crisis
mm-hmm.
and or once-in-a-week crisis, but it's really special to them in ways that you know, us being at work, you have to keep in mind and recognize and
mm-hmm.
cope with effectively.
Mm-hmm.
But that's good. Like I said, that's good. I mean, that's something that keeps them going. And that's why it's not boring to come to this job.
What's the future
everything
hope for you? Where do you go? What do you do?
Well, one day when
give
I...
Give us the next decade.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I have a lot of friends that have retired and they're bored and... they're watching TV, and they're miserable, three or four of them. Really
even with all the channels we have nowadays?
No, they kind of just become, I don't know what they've become, boring, kind of. They're bored with themselves kind of thing. And my thing in my life cycles, because I believe in those, is that my next movement's going to be on doing more creative and innovative things than I'm doing now. I view myself, once I retire one day, that I'm going to be doing seminars, and I'll probably be doing them in Vegas and San Diego.
Vegas.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, because I have a condo there already, and I have it. My nephew has a business, and so on and so forth. I already have a place to be. So I will move on. I'm towards the end of winding down my career, but I'm just starting a new one. So that's
mm-hmm.
how I view it. That may be, hopefully that'll work. My health holds up. That's the main thing. Your health is extremely valuable.
But you take all these vitamins and stuff.
I try to keep myself up as bad. I work out a lot.
Yeah.
But then as you age, things happen to you, so you've got to deal with that. But mm-hmm. as long as you've got your health, in my view, you have everything.
Okay. You have to start with, I mean, before you can manage organizations and manage people and help people do stuff, you have to start with yourself and
yes.
keeping that intact.
Yes, and I also believe you have to follow your passion. I say that often to staff and students. It has to be in your gut. I said, I talked to some students yesterday. I said, it has to be in here in your heart. You have to want to do this so bad that you're going to sacrifice and discipline yourself because you're not going to get paid a lot. If you think you're going to make $1 million and win the lottery, that's not going to happen. That's not what makes you grow and helps you help people.
Well, excellence in anything requires tremendous sacrifice.
Tremendous sacrifice.
And so if you don't love it, at some point you're going to say, why am I doing this?
Yeah, we all love coming to work every day. I know we do because every day is different in behavior. It's always fun.
Oh, yeah.
It is for me.
I know. Oh, yeah.
I really do get a lot of energy, and I love teaching. I get a lot of energy from that.
Well, that's good. I'm glad. I'm glad you're in San Diego State and helping this community, you know, develop more students and get more students go for their education, get degrees, and so that's always good. it's always good because hopefully many of them probably will get jobs somewhere else. But, you know, if they stay here, that's great for us. You know, we win. Because then, you know, services can be provided to this community. A lot of the people that are getting licensed, they're from here. They're from here. And, you know, isn't that great? Before, we didn't have anything. So I'm glad. Or we had to get somebody from another county, another state. And so.
Yeah, I'd like to see us keep our talent in-house. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's leaving, unfortunately. But we're working on that.
Well, and to the extent that we can see the community with well-trained, well-respected professionals, I don't think that hurts us because then they can interact with us in ways that support the whole. And so, you know, we grow. We continue to face those challenges. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming aboard today, Warren. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having
me. I feel, you know, I'm all fired up now. I'm going to go out and, like, take on the world stuff because I'm inspired by what you said. So I appreciate
you
coming aboard.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And
thank
continue
you.
Good success and
well, and health.
We'll all keep working together.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So.
Thanks, sir. And thank you for listening today to Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness here in Imperial and Mexicali Valleys. We are doing, I know we're doing kind of the all of these experts in the course of this month, but and in 2 weeks, I think Jim Sims is coming aboard and doing a show on Thursday. He is. I think it's booked.
Okay.
You were gone. You were gone last week, so I've been looking at the calendar.
Okay, good.
but continue to join us. We're going to do some great shows again this month, and we'll see you again next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It. Heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUVO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.